It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle. Later this hour, we're going to be taking your calls about the state's COVID relief package, which includes cash payments to millions of low-income Californians. And our experts will be answering your questions about unemployment benefits. And that's coming up in about 25 minutes. But first up, six mass vaccination sites run by the city of LA are back open as of this morning. And that comes as the vaccine eligibility list for the city and county has expanded to include people who work in food, agriculture, and childcare. Joining us to talk about that and a lot more is Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti. Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Hi, Libby. Great to be with you.
So what should Angelenos who are waiting for a shot know about the city's vaccine program?
Well, you know, the city is providing more vaccines in LA County than any other entity with fewer sites. And I always start by thanking our firefighters, our core workers, and all the clinicians that are just doing an amazing job out there. But we're still stuck in what I say is the first phase of this vaccine rollout. Phase one, not enough vaccines. I was joking with a friend that I'm going to start a reality show called Vaccine Hunter because I spend the entire day trying to find more vaccines in the state, in the country. We send out firefighters to scoop up stuff at pharmacies that's unused. And so I know it's still tough for a lot of people to get appointments, especially as there's more that's opened up. But phase two nationally, which is coming soon, will be not enough capacity to meet the onslaught of vaccines that are coming. And it's simple math. 80 million vaccines have been distributed roughly in the United States in the first 2 months of this rollout. In the next four, there'll be 520 million. And that's just Pfizer and Moderna. Add 100 million from Johnson & Johnson, which was just approved. And you've got enough vaccines from this point moving forward for 360 million Americans by about mid-July to get vaccinated. So it's going to be a huge onslaught. And we're building that up so that places like Dodger Stadium, which today are really only at half capacity, it's the largest vaccine site in the world, we believe, but it could probably double its daily throughput, as well as the MOVE vans, which are taking vaccines into vulnerable communities that aren't being reached by some of the mass centers. That will, I think, in the next couple of weeks, really make it not only easier at city sites, county sites, through your healthcare providers and clinics to get a vaccination, but we may see more rapidly than we think this whole tier system completely go away. And I look forward to that day because if I were king for a day and I could make the decisions, I'd be going into neighborhoods that are hardest hit and just saying, anybody who needs a vaccine in this neighborhood, step up. We're going to set up in this parking lot and just get the throughput going much more quickly.
So it sounds like you do think the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will improve this bottleneck of supply that we're dealing with.
Actually, the biggest supply will come still from Moderna and from Pfizer. They have 520 million doses between now and the end of July that they're going to be delivering. But Johnson & Johnson, another 100 million on top of that, which is great.
So the health insurance giant Blue Shield is taking over distribution for the state of California starting this week. LA County is not in the first wave that Blue Shield will be dealing with, so it's not happening here right away. But what do you expect from this more centralized approach as opposed to each county setting their own policies?
Well, I think it's about accountability, but I also think, you know, Los Angeles County is almost like its own state. In fact, we're bigger than, you know, 45 states. And the proof's in the pudding. You know, LA City, for instance, we've distributed 98% of the vaccines that we've gotten. And LA County now has over 400 places to get vaccinated, which is not just the most in absolute numbers, but the most per capita. Like, for instance, in San Francisco, that's a tenth the size of LA County, but there's only 11. So the equivalent would be about 110 up there. We have 400, which is almost four times more. So like I said before, the capacity is really here. I welcome them being involved if it means we get more vaccines and there's more accountability and they help make sure that people are getting, you know, that 100% out when they receive them. On the other hand, I hope they continue to give, you know, LA County kind of the independence. And quite frankly, I've been telling the White House, I spoke with the coronavirus czar, Jeff Zients, last week. I've been on the phone with them frequently. Give LA City direct supply, because when we have so much capacity and we're doing more with less than anybody else, we can build on equity, we can get it to vulnerable communities, and we can see schools open more quickly, we can see more people get vaccinated more quickly. And so I'm hopeful that, like six other cities in the United States right now, for whatever reason, the Trump administration had six cities but didn't include the second biggest city in America, that we can get a direct vaccine supply. And I think in the next couple of weeks, as the supply really ramps up, that's a real possibility.
The state says the goal of this handover to Blue Shield is in part more equitable distribution. And you've seen the numbers between neighborhoods in Los Angeles. I mean, places like Bel Air versus what's happening in South LA, the disparities between wealthier, whiter areas and neighborhoods with more people of color and more poverty. It's shameful, quite frankly, the difference in vaccine distribution. What needs to be done? I mean, how can we change that?
100%. And Libby, when I saw the initial numbers for the county statistics, I said, we've got to not only look at demographics by represented percentages by ethnicity, you got to look at where the impact is. For instance, you know, Latinos were 50% of the county, but 60% of the cases, and sometimes even higher percentage of the deaths. So I kind of surged up these MOVE teams, we call them. It's mobile outreach for vaccine equity. And we went to South LA with vaccine, with firefighters, working with council members, community groups. And in our first week, we had in South LA, 77% of the vaccines were distributed to Black Angelenos, over 90% to Angelenos of color. We went with council members on the east side to Council District 14. We went to Northeast San Fernando Valley, to Westlake MacArthur Park. We have five of these teams, and I've promised 10 of them by the end of the month. It's almost together as big of a site as Dodger Stadium, but it's getting it to the communities that need it. Second, we're texting people in those communities when new vaccine appointments open up. So we know that people who have a laptop, who are watching the news, you know, that they will find their way, and they have a car, they'll find their way to the mega sites. But now we're looking at providing transportation to people with disabilities, dedicated lanes, using Metro and other providers, even Uber and Lyft, to be able to put together the transportation to those sites, or to just bring them straight to the neighborhoods where people live. And I was in Boyle Heights, Libby, walking door to door. And people, I think, often say, oh, communities of color aren't as technologically savvy, et cetera. That's a misnomer. We absolutely have connected communities, but they're not necessarily through laptops or desktops. It's through mobile phones. And you have to also go and talk to people. So talking to a densely populated neighborhood in Boyle Heights, where my family's from, I was able to, you know, in one afternoon, probably talk to 15, 20 people. I know by sundown, that meant 200 neighbors knew about the mobile clinic that we had set up to vaccinate people. And you really have to get out there in the field, talk to people, let them know. And these very strong social networks that are not part of, you know, something on Facebook, but are part of the neighbors talking to neighbors, is where we need to see federal government, the state, fund more community-based groups who are trusted to get the word out.
So quickly, because I've only got a couple more minutes with you and I have some questions to get through, I want to ask about school reopenings. We're seeing that LAUSD Superintendent Austin Buettner said yesterday that the governor promised 25,000 vaccines for district staff to help them reopen. UTLA president is saying that there is just not a chance that this is going to happen unless they have assurances about the kind of safety plans that are in place, and that obviously this incentive structure that the governor has set up could potentially mean that poorer schools who don't have that equipment are starting to lose money starting April 1st. What's the way forward to get kids back in class?
Well, we've got to get kids back in class, and I'm here to help. And one of the things that I'd point to is the city of LA has essentially been doing classes in buildings, in our rec centers, run by our rec and parks employees, public employees, all year long with safe protocols. Maybe it was to help those kids log on to Zoom. Maybe it was to do different activities without massive outbreaks. And so I want to share that with teachers, with the administration, with anybody who doubts that we can do this safely, because we've witnessed that in very dense communities, low-income communities, communities of color. And I think it should be all of our collective priority to not figure out all the reasons why not, but to get to yes. These kids are suffering. We see suicidal ideation going up, and certainly starting with our elementary school youth. That should be our top priority. It was great to see the governor put that aside to work with our superintendent and the district to make sure those vaccinations aren't there just for teachers, by the way. Remember, we have school employees who never stopped working, who have been out there and exposed. We need to, you know, we have card rooms open and not classrooms. It seems absolutely insane. So, you know, I'm here to help by showing what we've done and how those protocols have worked. I'm here to help vaccinate if there's any excess that they need through our city vaccination centers, which I've also offered. And also, I think we just collectively need to take those baby steps towards yes and not towards no. We can't run away from our responsibility, and I'm never going to stop saying that loudly.
I'm speaking with L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti. Last issue, Mr. Mayor, council members are voting to override a veto that you issued back in December. In just a few minutes here, you didn't approve of the way that they were planning to spend the remaining money that was cut from LAPD last summer during the height of the George Floyd protests. Since then, the council has drafted several amendments to their spending plan. They're moving $32 million out of $88 million to different projects like unarmed response to homelessness and nonviolent 911 calls. Why did you issue that veto back in December, and what do you make of this updated, adjusted plan out of the council?
I'm actually really excited by it, Libby. And to see, you know, first of all, in the first package, there was a lot of good stuff, but there was some stuff in there that to me didn't rise to this moment. You know, everybody wants their sidewalks fixed, but that to me didn't speak to racial justice, this moment of talking about what we could do to take the sort of burden off of our police officers' shoulders to be social workers, mental health professionals. We've seen tragic outcomes. So I think the good work that happened between that veto and now makes this, and the council president and I have worked very closely in the last 24 hours, to really say this is exactly what we're talking about doing. I'm going to be building on that. My state of the city is in the next couple of weeks, and then I unveiled a budget. And I want to see even more massive opportunities to do things like universal basic income pilot, to expand our intervention workers, who are people who can prevent gang violence from happening without having a police officer respond. Mental health vans, which will roll out soon, that will be 911 calls that is a non-police response to people experiencing mental health crisis. So I'm really excited about the changes. I think they're good ones. They do meet the moment much more than what I saw in the first draft. So it's irrelevant. It's almost like a friendly veto override that confirms the work that we said in December. It's never easy to veto something, especially when there was some good stuff in the package. But now it got a lot better, and I'm satisfied that that happened.
Last question for you, because I know you got to run. Is the city doing enough to reimagine public safety? Activists will point out we're still spending more on policing in various ways all the time.
I think Los Angeles is absolutely leading, whether it was the first city to implement the eight can't wait, procedures on use of violence this past summer, whether it's the mental health vans that will be a revolution for a major city in America when those roll out. But there's always more to do, Libby. I agree. And it's not just about policing. We've got to make those investments in communities of color, in our education system, in our healthcare disparities, and in our economic opportunities. I founded a group for basic income of mayors across the country, and I really want to see a pilot here in Los Angeles that looks at the way we can provide, as we did with our Angelino card during this pandemic, a route out of poverty, because that stops those routes that head towards violence, that head towards the police interactions that we don't want to have. And I also think we put too much on the shoulders of our police officers, whether it's that they have to spend hours at a traffic accident instead of a civilian worker being there, or that we expect them to be the homeless outreach team for Los Angeles. So we've not only been doing that with suicide prevention, now homeless outreach, the mental health vans. I think these things are absolutely revolutionary, and we need to keep going, and there's a lot more to do.
LA Mayor Eric Garcetti, thank you very much for being here on Air Talk.
Thank you. Great to be with you, Libby.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to one of the council members who is voting to override the mayor's veto. I'm Libby Denkman, in for Larry Mantle, back after this. Welcome back to Air Talk. I'm Libby Denkman, in for Larry Mantle. In just a few minutes, the city council is expected to issue a rare override of a veto by Mayor Garcetti. And with us now is one of the council members who will be taking that vote. Curran Price is the Los Angeles City Council member representing the 9th District, which includes much of South Los Angeles and the western portion of downtown LA. Welcome, Councilmember Price.
Thank you, Libby.
So we are talking about the money that was left over after the city council voted to cut $150 million out of the LAPD's budget last summer during the height of the George Floyd protests. And the stated goal at the time was to reinvest those funds in Black and brown neighborhoods and marginalized communities. And some of that money, just to give folks some background, it was used to mitigate city worker furloughs. Many city workers are from Black and brown communities. And there's now about $88 million left over, which the council is splitting up by district based on census tract poverty numbers. And your district, the ninth, is getting the most funding. First, council member, let's go back. How did you initially decide to spend that money? And what did you make when the mayor decided to veto that plan back in December?
Well, thank you, Libby, for the question. First of all, I certainly supported the motion to reduce the police budget by $150 million, and was very strongly supporting the $88 million that was set aside for reinvestment in communities of color and reimagining public safety. I certainly didn't share the mayor's view that all of the proposed spending didn't meet the moment, but it did give us a chance to kind of rethink some ideas and some proposals. And the fact that we're proposing expenditures prioritized around poverty, economic development, safety, youth programs, homelessness, I think is significant. Our constituents, the constituents I represent, want these funds to be used in ways that's going to really impact their areas, their communities. So happens that we've got the poorest, most impoverished areas. And so the spending that we're proposing is based on conversations, based on suggestions, based on ideas, community meetings, et cetera. And we are very proud to be proposing a guaranteed basic income pilot program.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that in just one second. I just want to let folks now know that, you know, this is a new set of recommendations that are going along with the veto override. So you're saying, you know, we're going to go ahead with our plan for spending, but you have added these recommendations, as you mentioned. And one of the spending adjustments is this $6 million for universal basic income, a pilot program for single parents in your district. And I was really surprised to read about that. Can you talk to me about what drew you to a project like a UBI program?
Well, you know, I certainly have been reading about these experiments going on all over the country. Not a new idea, a new concept. One that promises to be an important tool in helping to lift people out of poverty. I thought it would be important to have that kind of experiment in South LA, in my district, that has high rates of unemployment, high rates of poverty, high dropout rates, gang violence, you know, probably the second highest homelessness concentration, a area that has been neglected over the years. And so I'm excited about the chance to pump $6 million into this program that would provide $1,000 a month for a year. And as I said, be the largest guaranteed basic income program to date within the U.S. And we're excited that it's going to happen here in L.A.
And I think that's really interesting, too. At the time, Compton is launching or has launched a universal basic income program. So this is really something that more and more communities are looking at. And I think during the COVID pandemic, we really saw the impact of financial assistance on people's lives. Do we have a timeline for when that might start, or are we still kind of looking at laying the groundwork and making plans for that?
Well, they said in this program, we targeted to single parents, you know, the mom with two kids who's trying to make it, a dad who's got the kids and trying to make it, you know, some may be working one or more jobs. But as I said, it'll be an opportunity to see how this program works on a larger scale in an urban area where there is really need.
So, you know, I asked the mayor the same question when I talked to him earlier. Is the city doing enough to reimagine public safety? Because we hear from activists that oftentimes what happens is politicians go before cameras and make a big deal about, you know, for example, the $150 million cut. But then later on, there's more investment in the police department. There's even a new chartered department that's starting. The Community Safety Partnership is starting as a new department within LAPD. And that really frustrates groups like Black Lives Matter, who are asking you to invest more in alternatives to policing. Is the city doing enough?
Well, our spending plan, for example, does include money for creation of unarmed crisis response teams for nonviolent calls. And again, significant that the districts 8, 9, and 10 are putting in money to make that happen. We're setting aside funds for community intervention workers, again, help reduce violence in our neighborhoods, again, each of our districts, 8, 9, and 10, recognizing that's an important element. We're putting money into safe passage programs. And those are the programs that help monitor safe passages at schools and parks and create an environment, again, for kids and families. We're putting money into the, as I said, homelessness multidisciplinary team. So we're spending on a number of levels. You know, we don't have one problem. We've got several. Certainly homelessness is an umbrella that links all of these issues and programs. And so we're trying to, again, be creative, be inventive in allocating these resources. And let me point out, in CD9, you mentioned that there's almost $21 million. We certainly are only proposing to allocate less than half of that at this time.
So there's a good amount of money that's reserved that you're still looking at how to spend.
Still looking at, still getting suggestions, still talking to people. And again, we want to be strategic and creative and effective.
One thing that I heard from this conversation about the mayor's veto, he criticized you and other council members for really spending too much of the funding on things like infrastructure, road improvements, things that are the basics of city services. But, you know, coming back, Council President Nuri Martinez and others, and you included, said, well, we surveyed the people in our district, and these are the types of things that they wanted to see done. Is there a disconnect between what folks assume constituents of yours would want to see the money spent on and what they actually want to see the money spent on?
Well, no, but that's why it's important to have the input from citizens, get the feedback. I did not propose any infrastructure improvements, for example, in my preliminary proposal. And let me point out that none of the proposals had dollar amounts associated with them. The mayor was sort of vetoing concepts because no one was proposing specific dollars associated with those activities. While our district wasn't looking at funds in that way, some did, and some do, creating jobs programs, other kinds of opportunities that will benefit the community. I think there's an opportunity for citizens to have some input, have some real say-so in making their determinations, and I think that it's reflected in proposals presented by the council members.
Councilmember Curran Price, he represents the 9th District, which includes much of South L.A. and the western portion of downtown L.A. Thank you so much for joining us here on Air Talk.
Thank you.
And coming up next, we are going to be taking your questions about the new assistance payments that are coming from the state of California, $600 for folks who live in California, and also your questions about assistance for small businesses, all sorts of things. If you have any questions related to EDD, you can give us a call at 866-893-5722. Again, we're doing an AMA on EDD coming up next, 866-893-5722, helping you navigate the labyrinth of issues with unemployment assistance right now. I'm Libby Dankman in for Larry Mantle, back after this.